Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 28th of February, 2018. I'm Sue.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Louise.
And your sound engineers this week are John, Martin and Cam. Phil will now start us off with the talking news.
It was the house where a homeless man unleashed an horrific knife attack on a family who sheltered him. Aaron Barley murdered mother Tracy Wilkinson, 50, and her 13-year-old son, Pierce, at the four-bedroom home in Stourbridge. Husband and father, Peter Wilkinson, 47, was also attacked by the 24-year-old when he entered the house in Norton following the early morning double murder. Now, a year after the attack, Rathmore Lodge has been put up for sale, priced at $650,000. Peter Wilkinson and daughter Lydia Wilkinson reportedly moved back into the home in October. The same month, Barley was jailed for life with a minimum term of 35 years. A five-page brochure for the listing from estate agents Leeshaw Partnership shows images of the kitchen, living room and bedrooms. It also features pictures of the garden and outside patio where Barley was captured on CCTV hiding before going inside the home to attack his victims. A description refers to electric gates along with an alarm and CCTV system at the property. The estate agent was contacted by the Express and Star but refused to comment. Barley had been taken in by the family after Mrs. Wilkinson saw him homeless outside a supermarket. They helped him find a home and a job, but Barley would repay them by creeping inside the home in Norton, armed with a kitchen knife. He attacked Tracy Wilkinson and Pierce in their beds. Mr. Wilkinson, who had gone outside to walk the dog, was stabbed six times on his return. Barley then attempted to escape in the family's Range Rover Discovery, but crashed and was arrested. Daughter Lydia was away at university at the time of the attack. A neighbour who wished to remain anonymous said, "It must be heartbreaking for them. I still think about it every time I pass the house and cannot imagine what it was like for them. To be in the house where your wife and son died in such a horrendous way must be terrible. To move would be a chance for them to make happier memories."
Dudley Council's Environment Chief has promised to help resolve parking problems in Amblecote, which some traders say have been killing business. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for the Environmental Services, said she plans to make a 24-space public car park off King William Street into a two-hour-only parking area. Traders have been complaining that members of staff at certain local firms have been hogging the free spaces all day long, leaving customers visiting other businesses with nowhere to park. Lee Smart, director at Jeff Hill Gas and Electrical Superstore in Amblecote, which has been trading for more than 50 years, said business bosses have been losing money and fearing their companies could go under. But he said he was pleased to hear Councillor Shakespeare has promised to prohibit all-day parking on the small free public car park. He said, "It's exactly what we wanted. We applaud the idea and that Councillor Shakespeare is doing something for us. This has been going on for 5 years. This will help to sustain business." Another car park, also in King William Street, which has 44 free spaces, will continue to offer all-day parking, though, as Councillor Shakespeare said she doesn't want to disperse that many extra cars onto nearby streets. She said, "We have to be considerate, not only of businesses, but also residents. I wouldn't want that volume of cars to be dispersed to local residential areas." Councillor Shakespeare says signs would be going up over the coming weeks on the car park to notify motorists of the change in terms, which she said would be policed by enforcement patrols. Traders have also welcomed a U-turn on the plan to cut down two landmark long-standing trees on one of the car parks to create a couple of extra spaces. Councillor Shakespeare said, "We were going to remove those to give additional spaces, but I've had feedback that people don't want the trees removed, so they're staying."
The results of a consultation on council tax increases in a Black Country borough have been ignored, with a 4.5% hike put forward despite most people being against it. Dudley Council bosses announced the launch of a consultation in October, insisting they are ready to listen to taxpayers. But a report has revealed 78% of nearly 1,400 respondents favoured either a 3 to 4% overall tax rise, lower than what was eventually proposed. Leaders floated a 2.99% rise when the council's draft budget was announced in October, lower than other authorities in the region, but said they would ask residents whether they were prepared to pay more. The plan then was for a 1.99% rise to fund council services and a further 1% to support adult social care. Residents were then asked if they'd be happy to pay more to help fund social care. But in the end, a 2.99% increase was proposed for frontline services and a further 1.5% for social care. Council bosses said the rules from the government on the maximum amount they were allowed to charge changed during the consultation. Results showed 55% of people favoured the 2.99% total rise that was originally proposed by the Conservative-controlled authority. Another 23.2% said they would be willing to pay 3.99% more, while 21.7% said they would pay 4.99% extra. Announcing the planned 4.5% rise earlier this month, Finance Boss Councillor Steve Clark said it is the right thing to do for our residents. Opposition Labour Group leader Councillor Peter Lowe insisted bosses should have been clear about the rule changes during the consultation. He said, "We need a council that listens and is open about decisions that need to be made, rather than seeking their views when actually their views will not be taken into account because of the reality of the situation we find ourselves in Dudley." Councillor Clark said, "When the consultation was launched, the maximum increase allowed by the government for basic council tax was 1.99%. Even with the proposed increase, Dudley will still have the lowest council tax in the whole of the West Midlands and one of the lowest across the country."
Demolition crews have moved in on outdated flats in Wolverhampton, paving the way for hundreds of new homes. The empty tower blocks in Churville Royes, Heathtown, are being knocked down to make way for more than 300 new homes. The demolition and clearance work is due to continue until the summer. The Heathtown project was built in several phases. Phase 1 was approved in 1967 and consisted of two 22-storey towers, Alder and Brockfield houses, and one 20-storey tower with phases 2 and 3 approved in 1968. And consisting of one further 20-storey tower, Princess Margaret opened the estate in April 1969. Heathtown councillor Milkinder Jaspel said, "This is a welcome sight and the demolition is long overdue. We should have done this years ago. Work started before Christmas and we are moving in the right direction." Councillor Jaspel, who visited the site yesterday, said, "The flats have been demolished. The demolition programme will also remove garages, a disused underground car park, 36 masonettes and other vacant buildings. The programme will pave the way for the development of more than 300 brand new homes for sale and rent, including new council homes across several sites as part of the revised Heathtown Master Plan. There will be a mixture of one and two bedroom apartments, two-bedroom bungalows and two, three and four-bedroom houses. Each home will have its own parking. Phase 1 began in November where walkways and garages were demolished in the Hobgate Road area. Other work included disconnecting and rerouting the district heating pipework. The ground and lower floors of Ling House were also refurbished to provide new office, meeting and activity space for the Hope Family Centre. Birmingham-based DSM Demolition won a contract worth £941,367.55 from the council to carry out the demolition. Wolverhampton Council bosses said the local authority is also making investments in leisure centres, leisure facilities and car parking around the estate. Hundreds of new homes are to be built at the site. It is exciting times as we move ever closer to developing new homes on the Heathtown estate, the majority which will be houses with gardens.
Jeremy Corbyn hit the streets of the Black Country today to rally against government cuts to police grants. The Labour leader took a stroll down Starbridge High Street as part of an action day, following a meeting with party members in Wollaston. He was accompanied by officers from West Midlands Police, the region's Labour Police and Crime Commissioner, David Jamieson, and Shadow Attorney General, Shami Chakrabarty. During his visit, Mr Corbyn had coffee in the Chemistry Cafe and visited the Cats Protection charity shop, where he bought a sculpture. He called for more investment in the police and warned that fewer bobbies on the beat and slower clear-up rates had become part of the problem. Recorded crime is up one-fifth since 2010, with figures for the Black Country showing a spike of 14%. Labour says this is partly down to 21,000 police officers being cut from the service since 2010, around 2,000 of which have gone from West Midlands Police. In its general election manifesto last year, Labour vowed to put 10,000 extra police on the streets. Mr Corbyn has accused Theresa May and Amber Rudd of trying to protect communities on the cheap. The resources have to be made available to keep people safe, he said. The Labour leader said today that funding cuts were having a big impact on increasing crime levels across the West Midlands. There is no doubt that crime is being made worse by police funding cuts, Mr Corbyn told the Express and Star. If you have fewer officers on the beat and then you have slower clear-up rates, which become part of the problem. There are also general issues of dislocation, where you close youth centres and dismiss youth workers. As a society, we have to invest in the police, but we must also invest in what I call the social infrastructure that goes around people's lives. Mr Jamieson, a long-term critic of the government over forced budgets, says WMP has lost £145 million over the last 8 years. In the next 12 months, frontline police officers' numbers across the region are set to fall by 78, despite a £9.5 million funding boost achieved by rising the police council tax precept by £12. And 24 police stations are set to close, including 8 in the Black Country, as part of cost-cutting measures to save £5 million. He said today, it has taken time for crime to start going up, but what we are seeing now is that the police are unable to do the preventative work they were doing previously. The government insists it has protected police budgets. However, in real terms, funding was cut by £2.5 billion from 2010 to 2015, with a further £500 million slashed since then.
A nightclub where an aspiring footballer was stabbed to death has closed, with bosses blaming a campaign against the club. Ryan Pazzi died after being stabbed in Chicago's in Starbridge last August. Cobe Murray, 19, has been found not guilty of murdering Mr Pazzi after a Crown Court trial. Today, bosses of the Rye Market venue said it was being shut down with immediate effect because they have been blamed for Mr Pazzi's death and denied being at fault. More than 3,500 people have signed a petition calling for the club to close for good. Mr Murray of the Broadway Dudley denied murdering 24-year-old Mr Pazzi and was cleared of murder and manslaughter by a jury at Birmingham Crown Court. Mr Murray told the court he had a knife in his hand and pushed out to fend off an attack, accidentally stabbing Mr Pazzi. Peter Marks, chief exec of Delta Oils, which runs Chicago's, confirmed 18 full and part-time jobs will go due to the closure of the club, which first opened in 2012. He said, "We are not the heartless business we have been portrayed to be." He said everyone who worked at Chicago's was devastated by Ryan's death and could not comprehend the impact it had had on Mr. Pass's family and friends. He continued, "Chicago's never had a chance to defend itself due to the legal case and was consistently misrepresented by many. Until that tragic night, the club had an unblemished licensing record of providing a fun and safe night out for the people in Starbridge. As a responsible operator running a business in a generally safe time, at no point did we break any laws or breach our license, conditions set by the police and local authority, which required us to search a proportion of our customers entering the premises, which we did on the night in question." Putting the blame on a single venue is not the answer. Young people also need increased education about the dangers of carrying knives, he added. Society has a growing problem with knife crime and the lives it takes and ruins, Mr. Marks said. It is hard to comprehend why anyone would want to carry a knife on a night out, when such actions can have such devastating outcomes, he continued. As a wider community, we need to educate young people on the dangers of carrying knives. We also need to make sure that there is a clear deterrent. The truth is that for every knife we confiscate, the police very rarely make an arrest. Attitudes and the law need to change, so that carrying a knife is not only socially unacceptable, but there are serious consequences for possession. Making a difference would be a positive legacy in the wake of such tragedy. There is no doubt that our decision to close will have an impact on the wider health of the local late-night economy, which of late has been a lot quieter. While some may view the nighttime economy as a nuisance in our experience, a town needs a balanced economy with investment in both the traditional daytime activities and those nighttime offers that give a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. The closure of an anchor business such as Chicago's really benefits the town in the long term, in fact, quite the reverse. We are very sad to be leaving Stourbridge and would like to take this opportunity to thank our hard-working team and our loyal customers for their support over the years.
Pat McFadden has called for a fundamental reform to the inhumane assessment and distribution of disability allowance. The Wolverhampton South East claims come after he challenged the decision to cut the personal independence payment benefits allocated to one of his constituents, Martin Wright. Mr. Wright suffered a life-changing accident at work several years ago and has since been unable to work. Despite no improvements to his condition, he was reassessed 3 times in 3 years by the Department of Work and Pensions, only to see his benefit cut incorrectly, a subsequent appeal decided. Mr. Wright's wife Barbara approached Mr. McFadden and the Labour MP helped to successfully overturn the assessment. But Mr. McFadden said he was concerned that similar unfair cuts of PIP payments introduced by the Conservatives in 2013 were being sanctioned by the DWP. I'm really pleased for Martin and for his wife Barbara, who has fought so hard for him, and I'm also concerned that too many other people are suffering the kind of decision that Martin suffered unfairly, he said. I don't think this system is working properly. I think it needs fundamental reform. I think it's inhumane at times in the way that it works, and I want to see fundamental change in it so that more people can get a fair decision. He continued, I am pleased to say that the Department of Work and Pensions has now restored Martin's PIP allowance and also given him a guarantee that he won't be reassessed for a further 10 years. Mr. McFadden raised the topic in Parliament and Minister for the DWP, Sarah Newton, responded by stating customer satisfaction surveys found most people were satisfied with the assessment process. But Mr. McFadden said that each assessment within the Wolverhampton South East constituency had been overturned on appeal.
A metal firm has been fined £23,300 at court after a steelworker's hand was dragged into the machinery, costing him a finger. The victim, the longest-serving employee at iDry Metal Products in Broyley Hill, had to have part of his finger amputated, magistrates heard. The firm admitted contravening health and safety laws by failing to ensure workers were protected from the dangers of using the machinery. Victim Ian Beach, who had protective gloves on, was feeding narrow steel rods through moving rollers when his right hand was dragged into the machine and trapped, said Miss Elizabeth Thomas, prosecuting on behalf of the Health and Safety Executive. He was taken to hospital, but doctors were unable to save his right index finger, which was amputated after the incident on July 20, 2016. The firm had risk assessments carried out on two larger bending machines, which were more frequently used, but failed to include the smaller one in their appraisal, said Ms. Thomas. There was no need for people's hands to be up close to the rollers on the big machines, and that was the crucial difference, she said. A sign warning workers not to wear gloves when using the machine because of the increased likelihood of getting caught up in the rollers was not very obvious, the court heard. It had been installed after a similar accident in 2013, although the injuries were not so serious. Ms. Thomas said there were various safeguards that could have been put in place. The key is these risks need to be identified and, crucially, need to be communicated to the shop floor, she added. Wolverhampton Magistrates Court heard the business in Bevan Road, which is a family firm with an exemplary record of looking after its employees. And Mr. Beach has since returned to work at the company. In a victim impact statement, Mr. Beach said the experience was very upsetting and had caused him considerable pain. Apologising on behalf of the firm, Mr. Peter Smith said, "This is a well-run company and lessons have been learned." District Judge Graham Wilson fined the company £23,300 and also ordered them to pay £1,900 cost. He said, "The company has an exemplary record and I assess that their remorse is genuine."
An elderly couple in Tipton who live opposite a school have said they keep receiving parking fines despite their car always being legally parked outside their home. Desmond and Mary Sharman, both in their 80s, have become distraught due to the repeat incidents which their nephew, Nigel Salter, said was causing them unnecessary stress. Nigel, 52, added his aunt and uncle felt they were easy targets because of their age. The store manager, who views the elderly pair as the parents he never had, said they live opposite Great Bridge School in Mount Street, so of course it's chaos at 3 p.m. People are practically suicidal where they park. It's impossible for my aunt and uncle to get out. So he paid for this curb drop and a special white line outside his house where only he or a guest of his is allowed to park. But a warden regularly comes round because of the school and keeps ticketing him. I feel like at this sort of age they shouldn't be getting this aggravation. My aunt is quite ill and she's really upset by all of this. The couple have been living in their home for nearly 40 years and view their car as a lifeline. Mr. Sharman, 87, regularly uses it to take his wife to medical appointments or to visit friends and family. Thankfully, they haven't had to pay the fines, £70 each. But Nigel said it was something that they just didn't need. He added, "We contested the fine, but it was rejected by letter, so we had to go into the council offices and luckily a girl overturned them. But it's just extra stress that they don't need." Councillor David Hosel, Cabinet Member for Highways and Environment, said Mr. Sharman provided written consent to carry out legal enforcement outside his property, which the council has powers to do. The consent was for all vehicles, including his own, to be issued with penalty charge notices. Mr. Sharman was issued with a penalty charge notice. However, the notice was cancelled the following day after he provided details proving the vehicle belonged to him. Those details have been retained for our records to make sure no further notices will be issued to him in future. There is no record of any other notices issued to Mr. Sharman for similar contraventions.
Pre-tax profits for the owners of Merrihill Shopping Centre rose by nearly £40 million last year. Into Properties, the owners of Into Merrihill, saw its pre-tax profits rise by £38.9 million from £188.3 million in 2016 to £227.2 million. Into's Asset Management Director, Julian Wilkinson, said the spending would also now include upgrading the exterior of the Brawley Hill Shopping Centre, including recladding. "We have also instructed architects to provide new internal refurbishment of the centre, which is well advanced," he added. David Fiscal, Into's chief executive, said the underlying strengths of the Into business were much in evidence in 2017, as we recorded a robust overall performance, confounding the external gloom and negativity in pre-Brexit UK about retail and retail property. During the year, major flagship brands upsized and optimised their presence, with the likes of Primark, Next and River Island taking additional space in our centres, and Inditex and H&M expanding their brand portfolios with us. Major international brands have also continued to recognise the attraction of our centres. Mr. Fiscal said there had been a third successive year of like-for-like net rental income growth. Following increases of 1.8% in 2015 and 3.6% in 2016, Intu delivered a 0.5% increase for 2017, with a strong second-half recovery with growth of 2.4%. Intu also has significant investment projects underway at Intu Watford, Intu Lakeside and a number of other centres. It plans to invest a further £562 million over the next 3 years. The former Sainsbury's store, which was dismantled to its steel shell before being rebuilt as a 76,000 square foot flagship site for Next, is just about to be handed over to the chain for fitting out and opening later this year. Primark is taking over the ground floor of the former BHS store, and a tenant for the upper part is soon to be announced. The merger between Hammersmith and Intu is expected to complete later this year, and the enlarged group will be using the Intu name within its shopping centre business.
A traveller's injunction that stops unauthorised camps from setting up on parks, fields and other hotspots in Sandwell is set to be extended for an extra 3 years. The tough powers mean anyone who sets up an authorised encampment on 17 council-owned sites could be jailed. Sandwell Council bosses are now working on renewing the injunction in the courts for 3 more years. The powers have been brought in to stop those like the notorious Cassidy family, who set up camp on council and privately owned sites more than 25 times between June 2014 and August 2016. 14 members of the Cassidy family are currently subject to the ban, which has been enforced since August. The council is also pursuing the head of the family, John Cassidy, for the £10,000 cost of the current injunction, with High Court enforcement officers currently trying to track him down to serve an order to recover the costs. Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Economic Investment, Paul Moore, said, "This injunction, along with other action we've taken, has been incredibly effective. It's given the people of Sandwell much needed relief from antisocial behaviour, intimidation and fly tipping. The original injunction was for 12 months and we've been able to show that it works, that it's worked. We have now started the process to renew the injunction by June this year to continue protecting our land from the Cassidy family and unauthorised encampments in general." Councillor Moore said the number of unauthorised camps in Sandwell last year was 60% lower than 2016. Anyone breaching the current injunction could face 2 years in jail, a fine, or have their assets seized. Any breaches of the injunction should be reported to the council or to the police. The current injunction was granted after the High Court heard how the Cassidy family had caused antisocial behaviour and an extreme amount of fly tipping on sites across Sandwell. John Cassidy is banned from the whole of Sandwell, while the rest of the family are prohibited from setting up unauthorised encampments, causing damages to barriers and fly tipping anywhere in Sandwell. The 17 council-owned sites named in the injunction are Kent Road Open Spikes, Fire Park, Wensbury Millennium Park, Friar Park Road, Wensbury, Sandy Lane Open Space, Friar Park, Wensbury, Blakeley Wood Road, Tipton, Land off Dartmoor Street, Greets Green, West Bromwich, Shaftesbury House Car Park, High Street, West Bromwich, Churchfield Playing Fields, Newton Road, West Bromwich, Winter Lane Open Space, West Bromwich, Crookhay Lane, Chester Road Open Space, West Bromwich, Meadow Avenue Open Space, West Bromwich, Greets Green Recreational Ground, Clypit Lane, West Bromwich, Ridgeacre Industrial Estate, Ridgeacre Road, West Bromwich, Lion Farm Playing Fields, Newbury Lane, Oldbury, West Smethwick Park, Victoria Road, Smethwick, Harry Mitchell Park, Cooper's Lane, Smethwick, Black Patch Park, Foundry Lane, Smethwick, Tame Road Playing Fields, Brantall, Oldbury.
When Tion Bromley's mother suffered an epileptic fit, the five-year-old hero took control and came to the rescue. Keisha Edwards, 24, has lived with epilepsy for almost 10 years and sometimes goes into seizures. While it might be a terrifying moment for children, little Tion has learned to stay calm and deal with the situation like an adult. On Tuesday, after Miss Edwards suffered an episode of about 9 a.m, he made sure his two younger sisters, Soraya and Sharla, were safe before alerting a neighbour. There was no answer from the first two doors he knocked on in Ford Houses, Wolverhampton, but his determination and persistence saw his mother get the help she needed. Miss Edwards, who lives at St Anne's Road, said she was so proud of her son. "I was at home and had the children in bed with me when I went into a seizure," she said. Tion put his six-month-old sister, Soraya, into her cot, told his other sister, Sharla, to stay with me, and then went to get help. He went to one neighbour and then another, but there was no answer. But eventually, by the third, he managed to get a neighbour to help. "The neighbour came round and just checked me over and stayed with me until I came round properly. The neighbours are aware that he might come round. She was going to call an ambulance, but because I came round, she contacted my doctor's surgery instead." Tion, who is in year one at Rakesgate Primary School, has been helping his mum when she goes into her seizure since he was just two. She added, "He stayed at home just hugging me and giving me love. I'm really proud of him. He's been helping me since he was young and doing it since he was two. He used to call the police. I told him that during the daytime he should go and get help and at night call 999. When he was a lot smaller, he used to just sit next to me and cry. We had to put something in place so he could come and get help." Epilepsy seizures can start at any age and affect people in different ways. Symptoms can include a losing awareness, staring blankly into space, and collapsing. Ms. Edwards said he's going to make someone really happy when he's older. "He's just really happy that he's aware of what to do when I suffer a seizure. With me being a single parent, he has so much responsibility at the age of five, and he's so brave. It's so good that someone of his age is as aware and can go and do something to get help." For more information on epilepsy and advice on what to do when someone goes into seizures, go to www.epilepsy.org.uk. And with that final news item, we will now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Goodbye from Phil.
And goodbye from Louise.
Goodbye, everybody.